Have you noticed how suffering brings people together? Have you watched how people respond to disasters? I mentioned the trial of Timothy McVeigh earlier. What I didn't mention was the overwhelming response of fellow Americans, not only the folks from Oklahoma City, but people from the rest of the country rallied together after that horrendous bombing. With outpourings of every form of sympathy and compassion, from the rescuers who toiled without rest to those who offered every kind of tangible relief. We've seen the same kind of thing following several airplane disasters. No one was forced to respond. They came voluntarily, drawn like magnets to minister to those in need. The same happened in North Dakota following that awful flood in the spring of 1997. Suffering pushes us out of our homes. It puts us in touch with our neighbors. As my brother Orville stated after losing so much when Hurricane Andrew swept across southern Florida, it blew down all our fences and we finally got to meet all our neighbors. Hardship forces us to grab hands with one another and pull up closer together. Suffering never ruined a nation. Hardship doesn't fracture families. Affluence does, but not suffering. Not hardship. It pushes everybody to the same level with the same goal, survival. And so we're not surprised to find these Jews weeping and wailing and fasting together. Then Esther's maidens and her eunuchs came and told her, and the queen writhed in great anguish, and she sent garments to clothe Mordecai that he might remove his sackcloth from him, but he did not accept them. Esther chapter 4, verse 4. What is happening? Esther must have thought when she heard of Mordecai's state. What is going on? Why is he in mourning? Now that she is a part of the king's household, restrained from contact with those outside the palace, Esther cannot speak to Mordecai directly. So she sends him clothing to replace his sackcloth as a way of offering comfort to him for whatever has happened. But Mordecai refuses the clothing. Esther then sends one of the king's servants to find out the truth from Mordecai. Then Esther summoned Hathach from the king's eunuchs, whom the king had appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what this was and why it was. So Hathach went to Mordecai in the city square in front of the king's gate. And Mordecai told him all that had happened and the exact amount of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict which had been issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show Esther and inform her, and to order her to go into the king to implore his favor and to plead with him for her people. Esther chapter 4, verses 5 through 8. Mordecai not only informs Esther, through her servant, of all that has happened, even down to the specifics regarding the exact amount of money in the deal, he also sends along official evidence, a copy of the text of the edict. Have your queen read this, he says. This was signed with the king's signet ring. He didn't lose control of his emotions. He didn't exaggerate. He was careful with the information he communicated. Why do I make such a point of this? Because we live in a day of hearsay when few people pass along information that is precise and reliable. Do you? Are you careful about what you say? Do you have the facts? Do you offer proof that the information you are conveying is correct? While there are occasions when it's appropriate to pass along needed and serious information to the right sources, I'm finding more than ever a growing preoccupation with rumor and slander. Half-truths and innuendos become juicy morsels in the mouths of unreliable gossips. There is no way to measure the number of people who have been hurt by rumor and exaggeration and hearsay. Perhaps you have suffered this yourself. This kind of false information has happened to me several times. I recall being sent a registered letter from a man in which he said, "Tell me when you almost committed suicide. I heard this past week that you spoke to," he named the group, "that you mentioned that you had almost taken your life." Well, the truth of the matter is, I have never almost taken my life. I did remember speaking to the group he mentioned, and in my talk, I alluded to some of the strains and difficulties in ministry. Obviously, somebody in the audience read their own exaggerated interpretation into my comments. That's how false rumors get started. It certainly made for a much more dramatic story, but it was an untrue story and could have been a hurtful and harmful story. Thankfully, he wrote me personally to get the straight scoop. Not all do. Up in the Northwest, about every 2 or 3 years, the rumor resurfaces that I'm divorced. And so, rather regularly, I have to send word up there that I remain who I've always been, the husband of one wife. This is the same woman who's been willing to stay with me for over 42 years. That's the amazing thing.